Well, good morning. Welcome to this second session of Help for Harried Teachers. We spent some time the other day just commiserating, talking about the pitfalls part of this, where we I talked about a bunch of things that I either experienced or have seen that can cause teachers stress, and we talked about it some as a group. Today we're gonna try to pivot and talk more about some remedies. And so I'm gonna try not to spend a whole lot of time rehashing what the problems actually are. I'm gonna try to focus more on just some hints and help. I feel like, you know, sometimes one letter makes a big difference, and I feel like maybe the title should actually be Helps for Harried Teachers, because I don't know that I have, like, you know, definitive help to offer you, but I can, together, I hope that we can have some helps, some tips, some things to think about. Maybe one more disclaimer here too is that, you know, this list is stuff that I know that can harry me, or that some of it maybe we heard from you a little bit the other day, or those of you that were in the group. This is not nearly all of it, and maybe we can have some time to for you to throw out a few more things that you feel harried by, and ask the group for some wisdom. But let's just jump right in. So what I've done here on your handout is just list the things we talked about the other day, and then I've given you some space to fill in thoughts and ideas as we talk. So one thing that we started out our discussion the other day talking about was just this, the truth that as a teacher, you have a lot of responsibilities. There's a lot that goes on, a lot that you're asked to do in your day-to-day job. A lot. And then not just at school, but we all have family responsibilities of some sort. And if you think that's a lot as a single person, then just try getting married and teaching school as well, or administrating. There's church responsibilities for many of us, at least some kind of church responsibilities, and maybe some community other things as well. So what are some helps for just dealing with the weight of responsibility? And honestly, this is so broad, I don't know that a lot of my comments here will be very, very broad probably. But one thing that Diana Overhaul was in the first class the other day, and she had a really good perspective, and that is to evaluate my perspective of my job. Do I go into my day or into my year thinking that my teaching job starts at, in my case, 8 o'clock in the morning and ends at 2:30? That's the length of my school day. If that's my perspective, that my job is from 8 to 2:30, I'm going to be pretty frustrated by all the things that have to happen outside of that time slot. But if I just realistically think that no, my job starts at, you know, 7 or 7:30. My work day, honestly, is something like 7 or 7:15 to 4:30 most days. It varies a little bit, but that's just a little tweak in the perspective there that it can help me to not feel harried necessarily by stuff that pushes, you know, well past the end of school. It's not like I know some people say your second work day starts when school ends. Maybe that's true, but really it's just a continuation of your work day. And then just a few other comments. Notice I just did say normal responsibilities here, right? This is what you sign up for when you sign up for teaching. There's a lot that you keep track of, a lot that you do. I do think that you need to have a life outside the classroom. So think about what that means for you. Depending on your level of intensity, and maybe this is especially true if you've moved to a different community and you're teaching somewhere that you didn't grow up, you don't have, you know, the friends, the connections that you, maybe the family connections that you normally did. Don't let yourself get, now I want you to be committed to your job, but don't let yourself get so buried in it that that's all that you can think and all that you can breathe. The term self-care is kind of overused and a little abused. But, I mean, there is something to that. I really think that you should have some sort of hobby that's not school-related. Find something to do, whether it's, you know, anything from disc golfing to crocheting. Maybe reading, you know, something that's not really academic. Give yourself a, you know, just 5 or 10 minutes before you go to sleep at night, or read a novel or something. And then I mentioned before you go to bed at night, sleep is important, by the way. Be sure to get some rest. Maybe put that on your to-do list or something if you need to. And you don't need to feel bad about taking a little nap after school or sometime in the day. I have been known to lay my head back on the back of my chair and take a little doze after school, or lay your head on the desk or something. Maybe bring a blanket and pillow and curl up underneath the desk. I don't know what you need to do, but... You know that feeling when school lets out and you can breathe that sigh of relief, and then suddenly you become very tired. Now you can, maybe coffee works, but a little, you know, 15-minute nap can do wonders too. I have been thinking recently about just the importance of rest. And I don't mean by this just physical rest, although that's very important, but this is not all original with me. I heard some of this from somebody else as well. But think just a minute about the importance of Sabbath in God's created order. And so we know, you know, day six, God created humans. Think about Adam and Eve's first full day on earth was day seven. It was a Sabbath day. God didn't start them out and say, you have to work for a week to earn a day of rest. He created them and then gave them a day of rest to start their created existence. And even the whole thing of, in the creation account, where God says the evening and the morning were the first day. You know, day starts in the evening in God's economy. So the day starts with rest in God, in that worldview, and the week, the you know, God's created week, I guess, for humans at least, the first day was a day of rest for them. So rest is important. Sabbath, giving yourself time away from your responsibilities in some way, is very important. I think God telling his people throughout all of the Old Testament to remember the Sabbath was not just a command, like a heavy, a kind of a heavy-handed sort of, you must remember this, but you know, he knows what's best. He's inviting his people into rest. And speaker I heard, it's on a podcast interview actually, he said, it was a pastor, and he had his name was A.J. Swoboda. He wrote a book about Sabbath, actually. And he said, you know, as an American pastor, and I think this would apply probably to a lot of teachers, he said, as a pastor in America, if I break pretty much any of the other Ten Commandments, if I murder or if I commit adultery or something like that, I'm certainly going to lose my job, if not my freedom, right? But if I break the commandment to keep a Sabbath, I'll probably get promoted. And I think that's something to think about. How do we think about the importance of Sabbath space in our lives? And I don't mean just Sunday. This may not be practical, but if at all possible, I found it very helpful to give yourself just a little bit of breather in the day sometime, a little bit of downtime. And I know if you're teaching in the school with one, or maybe if you're the only teacher, then it's kind of impossible. Or if there's only one or two other teachers. But I teach with two other teachers. There's three of us on staff. And the last number of years, we've divided up, so one of us has recess duty for the whole school for 3 days. And that gives, for at least 2 days of the week, actually 3 days, we have, the others of us have our lunch recess that we can just breathe. We have some space to ourselves. Sometimes that's catching up on school stuff. Sometimes it's, you know, watching a YouTube video for me, to be honest. There can be some space, though, that I'm not having to be directly involved with students. I highly recommend, if at all possible, to give yourself a little bit of that somewhere during the day or during the week. And then I encourage you, if these responsibilities are, I say they're normal here, but if they're just too heavy, I really ask for help. Like, you don't think you have to do this all on your own. It's okay to be dependent on other people. Like, you don't have to make this run completely alone. And we'll talk more down here later about isolation. This is a big thing, but I mean, I've been in situations where we recruited moms to come in and like run some reading classes with younger grade students. Like one mom a day for, you know, 4 days of the week or something like that, just because I had to have help. And so it may not always be possible to get the help you need, but you can certainly ask for it. Any comments real quick on some of that stuff?
A stack of books works very good to put your head down on and take a nap.
There you go.
A stack of books in front of you.
Yep.
I find a walk is very helpful after school too.
Mm-hmm.
Before I start with my other work.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes a walk may be better than a nap. Different things work for different people. I've heard some people say, you know, go do a brisk, you know, go shoot some hoops, or, you know, go do something like that too. So either slow down or speed up, whatever works for you. We talked a little bit the other day about unclear expectations, maybe sort of nebulous job descriptions. I think this might be fairly common in a lot of our smaller schools, especially where we sort of tend to get whoever can agree to come teach and just sort of throw them in the classroom, and you're supposed to know what to do. There's lots of issues with that. But one issue with it is sometimes what you're expected to do is not super clear. What are my responsibilities as a teacher? You know, what am I responsible to plan? What's the board supposed to do? What's the chairman supposed to do? What's the chairman's wife supposed to do? What's, you know, is there a principal? Is it, yeah, different? There's all sorts of different administrative structures as well. My main comment here would just be to ask for clarity. Like, don't be, I don't think you need to be afraid to just ask, what am I supposed to do? And I hope, I think this might be maybe especially a challenge for some of you lady teachers, and maybe especially if you're sort of, you know, the teacher with the most experience, or the teacher with maybe sort of the head teacher, or maybe it's more of a problem where you're not the head teacher, but you're the one that knows what's going on, right? where you've got all the experience, but you're not actually, you know, there's a first year guy teacher who's expected to be in charge, or in the head teacher. I don't know. I'm sorry, girls. I know that's just, it is just kind of the way it is sometimes. But I do think it's okay to just ask for some clarity from your board, from your administrator or principal, if you have one. And if nothing else, talk about it with your co-teacher, you know, like figure out, okay, so how do we want to do this? You know, what are the things I should be responsible for and the things you need to be responsible for? Any comments on that? There's some of you ladies here that have taught for a long time and have probably run into that very thing. What's been helpful?
This isn't exactly that, but I've already come across where there was a man teacher and myself, but neither of us were given the responsibility to be the head teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also very unclear. And
yeah.
I think, yeah, just talking to your board about it is very helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I will say, I think, so I've been in a board position as well. And there's some of those things that, especially if you have a board members who've not taught, they may not really know that. They may not, and I don't mean that disparagingly, I'm just saying they may not know what's going on. They may not realize some of the questions you have unless you ask them. So I think it's fine. It's fine to ask for what you need. I have differing goals and vision written down there. This actually maybe sort of ties into the last thing there. This is fairly broad as well, but this can be, maybe you as a teacher have kind of different goals, different ideas than, you know, the board. Hopefully not, but it's possible. Maybe your goals and vision are different than, you feel like it's just, you know, you're on a different level than the church that you're working for, or than some of the parents, or hopefully not all the parents, but maybe a lot of them. I don't know if I have a lot of wisdom to offer that, except to say that if you feel like you have a vision for something different than or higher than, you know, some of the people you're working for, well, for one thing, I don't think that's unusual. I think I can say that without sounding sort of haughty, but I don't think that's unusual. You have been called to be a teacher for a reason. It's probably because you exhibited something that made people think that you have something to offer. And that might mean that you have different goals and different ideas than some of the people that you're working for. But keep in mind that you are working for them. So be humble about it. I think communication here is important. If there's an issue where your ideas about what's desirable are different than the ideas of especially your parents, in particular, sometimes just talking about it can help. I ran into some of this, just a practical example, where I had a family who just very freely pulled their children out of school. And I mean, to me, school attendance is kind of important. Like, I'm putting a lot of effort into this. Like, you should take it seriously, right? And the one year they were actually, they planned to pull their children out right at the end of school, right at the end of the school year, for like a week or something. They were going on a big trip or something like that. It was right over, I forget, it was like right over, it's like the week before the program or something. And I think it was right over, we were having a field trip right over that week too. And this was a small school and their absence was gonna leave a big hole on the field trip. Not to mention, like, we're preparing for the year-end program here. Like, you need to be here. Plus, trying to finish up school. There's a lot of schoolwork to get done. And the dad and I had kind of, I mean, I think we both knew that our vision and ideas for education were a little different than each other's. But I actually just wrote him a little letter, I think it was, and just kind of appealed to him to consider maybe not taking your family out right now. I said, I am willing to, like, if you wait until after school's out, like, I will come. Part of the issue was they had a chicken farm and they were without chickens right then, and so they wanted to go. I understand that, but I said, if you just wait till after school's out, like, I'll come do your chicken chores for you. So just talking about it might help. Frankly, it didn't really in that case. They went anyway. But I tried, you know. If the difference in goals or vision is between teachers, that can be a challenge too. Maybe somebody mentioned in our initial session the other day that maybe the issue is one classroom has different standards than the other one. Right? And that can be a challenge. And one student will say, well, they can do this, why can't we? I know I keep saying this, but just talk about it. I think that's very important. I hope you have the ability to communicate well about those kinds of things. Bring a third party in. I hope that most of you have either a school board chairman or some sort of administrator or principal that you can bring in to help sort of mediate some of that stuff if you need to. Or maybe just both of you as teachers can go to the third party, another teacher or your principal or somebody, and say, what should we be doing here? And let them sort of make the decision for you. Let your administration be the bad guy in some of those cases to, like, make the decision for you so that you're not having to stick your neck out. But I actually think too that especially for older students in some of those cases, it's not the worst thing in the world for your students to realize that life isn't completely fair and that some teachers, I mean, they're going to run into this. If they haven't already, they're going to certainly run into it in church where that family gets to do things I can't do. It might not be the worst thing in the world for them to just learn to be okay with the fact that, you know, the other teacher lets their students do some things that my teacher doesn't. And it's just kind of the way it is. It's going to be that way a little bit anyway. So if you can be upfront and open with your students, just set the expectations clearly for your room, and it can be okay, actually. Need to keep moving. Lack of continuity. This is something that can really cause some stress and some grief sometimes, especially for longer-term teachers. If your board is turning over every year, or your co-teachers are turning over every year, it's hard. I'm not talking to a lot of board members and administration here necessarily, but that's something that your administration needs to be thinking about a lot. You know, how can we keep teachers? For those of you that are teachers, though, well, one thing you can do is, you know, stay yourself so that so that you're not the one that's causing that lack of continuity. Keep teaching. I don't think I have a whole lot to say about this one. I just to acknowledge that it is kind of hard. Yes.
I think we have to keep in mind that it's not my school.
Yes.
It's God's.
Yes.
And He can run this, and mm-hmm. I don't have to.
Mm-hmm. It's a great perspective. Thank you for that.
Coupled with that, the idea that just because someone's new doesn't mean they don't have ideas that I can. Probably.
That's true. Yeah.
It's all part of what's together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, think of it as an opportunity.
You guys pray for long-term teachers.
Right, pray about it. We could just go down through the list here on all of these, right? Pray. Yeah, I don't specifically mention that here very much, but it's certainly a big part of that. Lack of support. This ties into a lot of some of what we've been talking about already. This can be, kind of like with the different goals and vision, you can experience this feeling of not being supported from, the parents of your students or the board or the church. I will say I think as a teacher, you're not going to last long if you don't feel like you have somebody behind you. Find that person some way or another. Whether it's a co-teacher or a board member, chairman, administration, a mom or a dad in church that gets you and can stand with you. And I will say here too, sometimes you might feel this lack of support, sort of feel like you're alone. I do want to assure you that your school board wants you to succeed. You may not feel that all the time, and you may wish that they were different, and you may wish that they would show up, but they want a good school, right? They want a school that works. They want you to do well. If for no other reason than they don't like to have to look for new teachers every year, so they I can assure you of that. And I think even in this case, it might not, it's not the worst thing in the world just to ask for, hey, could we get, somebody from the school board to stop in, start with once a month. It should be more than that. But, whatever it might be, hey, we have a staff meeting X day. Can one of you please be here, one time a month at least, or one time a week, or stop in to pray with us in the mornings before school. I do think it's very okay to ask for that. Most boards are not going to say, no, we don't think that you need prayer. So, I bet you one of them will try to make it work. Make sure that you're not the problem. If you're feeling a lack of support, make sure that you're not the one who's making it hard to support. I don't think I'm going to focus on that a lot, but make sure that you're not pushing your agenda at the expense of teamwork, working together. I hesitate to say this too, but if you really are in a situation where you just feel like you are very alone, where your vision does not match up with where you are, I'm not the one to say you have to stay in a horrible situation. But that should be, don't go there quickly. Right? I think you can believe in the goodwill of the people around you, believe in the goodwill of your school board, and trust that they actually do want you to succeed, and then ask for whatever help you can get. Any comments on that? I know this feels like we're doing a very basic surface brush over a big issue here, but
well, One thing I thought of, I know most of the teachers probably here have more experience than me, but I know in my first year sometimes there was parents that I didn't always feel like, I mean, not exact things that they did, but I just didn't feel like I had super good support from them. And then in my second year, last year teaching school, I realized a lot more how much support I did have from them. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you might have more support than you feel like.
Yes, yes.
And along with that, if you get invited to church people's homes and stuff, try to make that work. Mm-hmm. Getting into their homes is a great way to build relationships.
It is. Yeah.
Families. And also getting to build a relationship with your students outside of you being an authority.
I agree. I think that's very valuable. Back when I was teaching as a single person, the one community I taught in actually made a rotating schedule where us single teachers were scheduled to go to church people's places once every other week or something like that. I forget how it was. It feels sticking your neck out a little bit, but I mean, you could probably ask for that. You know? It's okay. And I do think, like Eric said, you do probably have more support than you realize. We are not always very good at telling people how much we appreciate them. I've realized that about myself. I think most people are that way. And so you probably do have more support than you realize. You just may not really feel it. And I will say also, I've seen this to some extent in my own life. I've seen it looking on at my dad. My dad was a school teacher for a number of years as well. And he struggled some with this very thing of just not feeling supported by some of his parents, some of the parents and the board. I was old enough to sort of see some of that. And now, though, when he meets some of those very parents and some of the very students that he struggled with the most, they're so proud to meet him, and they're so happy to introduce their children to my teacher, you know. And they're so appreciative of his impact on their lives. You know, it goes a long way. Even if you don't feel that support at the moment, don't think they don't appreciate anything about you, right? Even if they may have issues with some of the specific things. We need to keep moving here, because this is a big list of negative things. So, lack of supplies. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. This is probably just kind of a chronic problem in a lot of our schools, just simply because, for the most part, our conservative Mennonite schools are not, you know, money-making machines, and so we don't just, you know, for the most part, we're not going to be able to just freely have all the things we would want. This might not be a bad thing completely. Forces us to be creative. Teachers are great at begging and borrowing and stealing anyway, so I don't think I need to really tell you too much about how to do that. Please do, though. Like, you know what I mean. Share resources. That's one of the great benefits of attending stuff like this, I find, is just the way that you can realize, you know, different ways to repurpose some of the things you already have, different ways to do things, different ways to different places to get resources. Find resources that other teachers have come up with. There's a lot that you can do with a little bit if you are creative, or even if you're not creative, you can find other people who are and then get it from them. So, any specific comments on that? All right, let's flip the page over. Isolation. This is something that, again, really ties into some of the previous things here already, but it's possible as teachers, you have a little different kind of vision and a little different kind of lifestyle than many of your peers, probably. It is possible to feel a little bit isolated just from your, you know, your peers, other people in church. some of this may simply be the lot of teachers. In other words, might just kind of come with the territory. But I do think, kind of like I said, with, you know, feeling that lack of support, I really do think you need to have connection somewhere so that you're not feeling completely alone. You're not in it alone. Right? Like I was saying earlier, even those people that, you know, might feel most isolated from you really do want you to succeed. So you're not alone. You might have to do some of the reaching out yourself to find places where you can get that connection. Talked a little bit about differences between teachers. This is one aspect of isolation that I do really care about, though, is I don't want, if you're teaching in a school with more than one room or more than one teacher, I really don't want you to feel isolated from your co-teachers. And so please build those connections somehow. And again, I realize for some of you ladies, this might be a challenge. Because, you know, the men are supposed to be the leaders, right? But some men are, you know, maybe the reason you're a teacher is because you're a leader. And not all men are necessarily natural leaders. So I think it's okay to actually just realize that. And to some extent, to embrace that. And to be okay to sort of stick your neck out and ask for connection. Now, again, I know there's so much that I don't have time to say about that. It's tricky if you're single, both of you are single, and I know there's all sorts of dynamics there that are strange, but I do think, especially between co-teachers, I think it's vital that you're not operating as like two separate schools that happen to be in the same building, right? You've got to work together, and that connection you can build can be professional. It doesn't have to be like, you don't necessarily, I don't know if this makes any sense. I think you can have a good professional working relationship with somebody even if you're not necessarily friends. Like even if you wouldn't necessarily hang out outside of school, right? You can build a professional relationship with them. I hope that it goes beyond just professional relationships. Like, I hope you can be friends with the teachers you teach with. But it should at least be professional. Right? Now, maybe, I don't know, do I need to talk about the opposite problem where it maybe needs to be more professional and not too intimate? I don't know. If there's, this can be tricky too, obviously, if a single guy and single girl is teaching together. I would say in that case, yeah, professionalism is key. Like, work together as co-workers, right? And even if there is more than that going on, try to keep it somewhat outside of school, I would say. I do think professionalism here is important. Whether you're friends or not, try to work together as professionals. In other words, co-workers who are in the same profession. Like sometimes we sort of bristle a little bit at the idea of professionals, but I just mean by that, you know, work related. Like your focus when you're at school is on working together as co-workers, as colleagues. I mean, there's probably all kinds of practical things we could talk about there. If you feel that isolation from your co-teachers, one practical thing that I've done is just start to start having a weekly staff meeting. Now, if it's just two of you, I don't know. I should have maybe gotten a poll of sort of sizes of your schools. If it's just, you know, two or three of you, this can be a little bit weird sometimes. If it's just two of you, especially if it's a guy and a girl, I'd pull a board member or something in maybe if that makes it easier to make that happen. But I really think just building that kind of regular connection where you can talk about school stuff, talk about challenges, talk about plans. You know, make sure you're not, again, just do whatever you can to make sure you're not operating as two different schools. Do things together, eat together, play together. A lot of my comments here, by the way, are coming from the perspective of a relatively small school. We've got 30 students in our school, so we can actually, we can still all play together a lot of the time. I really encourage that. Even in a bigger school, I taught for a little while at a student at a school that was more in the realm of 55 to 60 students, and we still played, all the whole school got together and played prisoner's base or something once in a while. We didn't do it nearly all the time because it is, man, it's a pretty big group to try to organize. But thankfully, we had a huge lawn and we could make some giant lines and we could all play prisoner's base once in a while, and it's fun. And it builds those relationships, and I think it pulls you, it builds connections between the classrooms, and I think do whatever you can to get that to happen. Co-teacher challenges then sort of flows right out of that. Build connections where you can. If you are in, so some of this takes humility. We were talking already a little bit about more experienced lady teachers dealing with maybe inexperienced male teachers, where we sort of expect the man to be in charge. I think that takes humility on both sides, right? If you're the inexperienced one who's supposed to be in charge, be humble enough to ask for help. And if you're the more experienced one who's not in charge, again, just humility goes a long way here. You can offer help and suggestions and stuff in a very, in a humble way. I hope that you can build a relationship with your co-teachers where you enjoy working together. You can enjoy your interactions, even if, like I said, you're not, it's not the person you would hang out with all the time otherwise. And I've seen this work in other professional situations. I've worked in the hospital for 6 years. And it is possible to have professional relationships. In other words, relationships that I wouldn't have outside of work, right? Like, I wouldn't be friends with a lot of these people outside of work. But I became friends because we worked together. Right? And we had the same goal in mind. That was, you know, taking care of our patients. And I became friends with them, even if it was on a professional level. That we could work well together, even if I never even saw them outside of work. So that's a goal I have for you as teachers, that can be your experience with co-teachers. Several of these here are very related. There's relationship challenges and conflicts there next on the list. We've already talked a little bit about co-teachers here, but this, again, this is a super broad category. There's, you know, relationship issues between you and the potential between teachers and board, teachers and parents, teachers and teachers, teachers and students, students and students. That's probably the one I find almost the most challenging. What do I do when students don't get along? How much do I wade into that? Again, I want to just emphasize here that depend on others. Don't think you have to do this all alone. Be dependent. It's okay. Don't think you have to be independent. And then again, this is hard for me to say because I'm a people pleaser. I really am. I'll just admit it. I try really hard to keep people happy. And I don't like conflict. But I've had to realize that I'm not going to be able to keep everybody happy all the time. And especially when it comes to my students, I just had to realize that I just have to be okay with that fact. That I'm going to have some students that are a little bit, I teach older students, and that's maybe especially the case there. I'm going to have some students that are just a little disgruntled sometimes. And it's okay. Like, you are in charge, right? And just embrace that. And there is actually a certain amount of just peace that comes with the fact when I just realize that, you know, I am the authority here. And I can just square my shoulders and embrace that. And the fact is, most of my students ultimately do kind of like it better when I'm more, when I'm okay with just being in charge. They might fuss, they probably will, and they're gonna go around looking a little grouchy for a while. I told somebody before, I had a classroom mostly full of girls last year. Oh boy. But you know, at the end of the year, I gave them a little survey at the end of the year where I asked them questions about how the year went, and I've done this for the last number of years now. How did the year go? What were some highlights? What were some low points? What were things you really liked, things you didn't? And then just some space for comments. And oh, I got them. I gave them a big word bank of just like descriptive words and let them circle the words that they think best describes our classroom. Enlightening. Interesting. But I found out that some of the students that sometimes can be the most disgruntled are the ones who are actually the most appreciative of my efforts, and the ones who actually are the most thankful for some of the structure, you know? I found that to be enlightening, but don't put too much stock in the temporary unhappiness of your students. Now, where there's conflicts between students, that takes a lot of wisdom. I had a classroom full of adolescent girls last year. I don't have much to offer you on this one, I'm afraid. I don't know what to do with that. It's like Jacob said this morning, we don't all have the right skill set for everything. And I think it's okay to you know, enlist other people's help if you need to. If the conflict is directly between you and a student, or you and a parent, or a co-teacher, whoever it might be, this might be another place where it's good to recruit a third party, you know, to just kind of help you figure it out. Well, we're sort of running out of time. I was afraid that would happen. Unresolved personal issues. I'm not going to say a lot about that. You do teach. You bring yourself to the classroom, so try to make it the best self possible. Seek help for the things that you need help for, please. Whether that's, you know, just somebody to talk to, counseling, whatever it might be. Try to find whatever healing and wholeness you can for yourself so that you have your whole self to offer to the students. Time management issues, as we're running out of time. Procrastination, be aware of little things that suck your time away. For me, I have to really watch, I mentioned YouTube videos. I'm an information omnivore. I love information and learning. And YouTube is just like, it's a black hole for me. Like, it is so, there's so much information there and so much learning that can happen, but it can suck your time away like everything. So be aware of those little things. They're different for all of you, right? The little things that you think, well, I'll just do a few minutes, and then they might, you know, 30 minutes later you wake up and realize you've been gone for 30 minutes. Somebody mentioned the book Atomic Habits the other day in the book reports. I found that book to be very helpful as well for thinking about just little things that you can do that can help to change your life, change your habits, change your time management perspective. I'd second that recommendation. Talked the other day a little bit about classroom management issues, and boy, it feels like we're just actually kind of getting into the meat here in some ways. I'll just throw out a few things here a little bit. Procedures. Like, be sure to have routines and procedures in place. Don't invent the wheel every time a problem comes up. Like, as much as you can, think through a lot of these things beforehand and just know what you're gonna do when certain things happen and this happens. When a student does this, this is the consequence, right? And then on the flip side of that, I really think you need some kind of little, you know, incentive system or something too, but make it manageable, like make it procedural. Don't make it too complicated. I have the picture in my mind of like this Rube Goldberg machine where there's, you know, 1,500 moving parts, and this thing falls and knocks over the ball, and it rolls down here and knocks over the dominoes. And like, don't make your programs be like that? It's too much for you to keep track of, right? Make it simple. Like, you know, for every A grade, you know, you get a sticker that goes on the sticker chart. When the chart gets full, you know, we go do something special. I've done something like that for the last few years. They get stickers for good grades, but they also get stickers for just, you know, things that make me happy, things that I like. If I see them doing something well, I can give them a sticker for it. I tell them I'm the dictator of my own little country here, so I get to decide what, if it makes me happy, I'll give you a sticker. And if it makes me unhappy, I'll take a sticker away. I will take stickers off the chart then for infractions, for procedural things, for things that they shouldn't be doing, things they should know better for. I borrowed, by the way, that line about being the dictator of my own little country. I borrowed that from Bing. But yeah, own it. Like, you're in charge of your little classroom. So I really do think, are we supposed to be done? Was that the second bell? I only heard one, right? Okay. I really do think you need a system to deal with procedural infractions, though, that are not on the level of, like, you know, breaking some sort of moral rule, right? Yeah. What do you do if somebody turns in homework late or doesn't get their homework done, or you know, misses something when they maybe they scored their own work and they missed something? You need to have some kind of system in place to deal with those little procedural things. That's not necessarily a punishment. It's just, hey, you did this. This happens. Right? I think that's extremely important. Yes.
What do you use?
That sticker chart system is basically what I do. So I give them stickers for good grades and like positive stuff, basically whatever that means. If they did a good job on a little writing assignment or something, I'll give them an extra sticker for that. You know, whatever. And then if I find scoring errors, if they miss turning in their homework, whatever, then I take stickers off the chart.
I use, you know, write your name on the board if you didn't. So
yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah. I'll take a sticker off.
Yeah. So there's, you know,
little behavior stuff.
For those little behavioral procedural things that, you know, just breaking the classroom routine. Yeah, in a lot of lower grade classrooms especially, just writing the name on the board and then tally marks, and when they get five, they, I don't know, stay in for a few minutes for break, or, you know, like.
If they had their name on the board, they had to stay in for a minute and tell me what they did.
Yeah.
Or I also have used push-ups a lot.
Oh, okay.
They have to do five push-ups and tell me what they did, and then you can go out.
Okay.
I got that from a boy that you do push-ups for infractions.
There you go. That's a military thing, too, actually. If you're in boot camp, you can drop and give me 20.
They even don't think that it's so bad, but it's still kind of something. You have to get down on the floor, and you have to do it right when I see it.
Yeah.
Even if they think it's kind of a cool thing to do push-ups,
yeah.
You do it right now because you did so.
Yeah. Okay. So there's all kinds of ways. I got the sticker chart idea kind of from Bing, except he said he uses little stamps, like rubber stamps, and they can go, if they earn a stamp, they get to go like stamp the wall, like stamp the poster, and then he uses white out to white them out for, you know, infractions. So that'd be another way. Stamps, stickers, coins. One of my co-teachers used the same sort of idea with a coin jar. They could put coins in the jar for good stuff, and then he would take coins out for bad stuff. You know. So.
But then you always do something when it's full.
Yeah, so when the jar got full, then they would go on a little, I don't know, go get some ice cream or do something special or something.
When you had the
sticker chart, I did the same thing. So I did a little 8.5 by 11 chart that I just made a grid over a whole page, and then the little half inch stickers. I forget how many of them. It takes quite a few to fill up a page. But then.
About for the whole.
That's for the whole classroom. And so it's not like the smarter students get more rewards. They're all working together toward filling up the chart. So I like that kind of thing too. But then if they do something wrong and stickers come off, it's hurting the whole classroom, you know. So there's that little added pressure too.
So you wouldn't have a row for each student?
No, I have a group chart for the whole classroom. there'd be different ways to do it, I'm sure, but.
Can't do the work right, yes. Or something, you're not always taking all of his students.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would be really careful about picking on a specific student. Well, I think maybe they missed the second bell. I think it's supposed to be 5 minutes over. So feel free to go. I'll give you one quick book review or book recommendation. Well, two. For that perfectionism, idealism thing, we talked about that some the other day. I find this to be a big thing that I deal with. This feeling like I'm never quite good enough. Like I'm looking for perfection and I just can't quite get there. That can be harrying. That can be hard to deal with. It can be crippling. Perfect can be the enemy of good, by the way. So there was a book I read a few years ago called 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals. I loved the book. It was time management for mortals, but he kind of is sort of anti-time management, actually. The author's name is Oliver Berkman. It's written from a secular perspective, but he says, you are not enough. It's the opposite of what society will try to tell you. You're not enough. You're not going to get everything done. Right? You only have 4,000 weeks on average. That's the average human lifespan. And he said it's ridiculously short. So that's what he says. And just sort of embrace the fact that you're not going to get it all done and just be okay with that. There you can actually find some rest in that. There's another author I'll recommend called Kelly Kapick, K-A-P-I-C. And he writes from a Christian perspective. The book I know of, I have not actually read this, so I'm sticking my neck out here a little bit, but I've heard him speak about it on a podcast or something. And he said, the book is called You're Only Human. And he says, God designed you as human. God designed you with limitations. He designed you human. Your limitations didn't come as a result of the fall. And so, just be okay with being limited. And I will close with a verse, Hebrews 13, 20 and 21. Now may the God of peace, who brought up from the dead our Lord Jesus, the great shepherd of the sheep, equip you with everything good to do his will, working in us what is pleasing in his sight through Jesus Christ, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen. All right, you're dismissed.
What was Oliver's last
name? Oliver Berkman. B-U-R-K-E-M-A-N. Thank you for y'all's help.
Yeah, thanks for your time.